This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Supreme Court didn't just reverse Alec Murdaugh's conviction. It told the next trial court exactly where the first one went wrong on evidence. The financial crimes testimony has been flagged as excessive and unfairly prejudicial, but some of it can come back. How much? And whether what remains is enough to carry the motive theory. That's the fight at the retrial. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, is with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. As we break down everything that's now happened in the nuclear detonation, that is the case of Alec Murdaugh, the court said not all members would have admitted the financial evidence at all if they'd been the trial judge. If you're the new judge reading that, what's the signal? I mean, the new judge doesn't it's up to the judge. It's not up to the Supreme Court what gets admitted in the new trial. They punted it down to the circuit court, which will now set the new rules if there's a new trial, all of that, and the standards for it. The Supreme Court, it's a recommendation, but it is just that. It is a recommendation. The judge can keep it in, can exclude it entirely, can add a little bit, just hold a tighter leash. What are your thoughts here on the financial crimes aspect of this case, and where do you think it's going to be intermingled, if at all, in Alec Murdaugh murder trial number two?
Basics, Tony, are that when a person is on trial for X, like Murdaugh here is on trial for homicide, and then the prosecution tries to bring in evidence of Y, evidence of other crimes, other acts, that can often lead to reversals, because the idea is that the jury might, you know, focus on the uncharged conduct, the conduct regarding financial crimes, and say, hey, this guy's a scoundrel, and maybe the prosecution didn't totally meet their burden on homicide, but I hate this guy, and I'm going to convict him anyway. There's the specter of that. So I think the trial judge in the new trial is going to be very cautious about that. Look, he or she has already got direction from the Supreme Court that if you screw this piece of it up, this is probably how we're going to rule. So don't do that. So I think that the trial judge would be prudent to substantially curtail the financial crimes evidence. You got to let the prosecution put on some evidence of motive. This is their motive, whether the jury believes it or not. It's a different question. But I think it's going to be substantially curtailed, like maybe half a day or something of evidence would be a smarter move on behalf of this judge. We don't want a Murdaugh round three.
Yeah, his motive of the financial aspect of it, I think, was also exasperated by his drug use during this entire period of his life as well. And it was covered, but not hugely extensive. So if you remove the ability to show motive as being the financial side, and given what's left behind, what are you thinking about how the prosecution moves forward? And what do you think they're going to be able to use for, going after Murdaugh again, even though there's no other suspect, there's no another anything, the weapon is the weapon. They have, but they're not showing the intent if they have to remove the financial aspect.
You know, Robin, I might be in the minority on this, and this might be an unpopular opinion, but I thought that there were significant weaknesses, even in trial one. And now the prosecution is going to be more handcuffed in trial two. They're going to have to prove this motive that, hey, because his finances were in peril, he killed his wife and his son. Like, there's a disconnect there. There's a non sequitur there. And so I think the prosecution is going to have an even more difficult time. I am not wholly convinced we're going to see a conviction around two.
Yeah, because what do you do because they're going to have to shift. If they can't admit any of the financial stuff, then they got to shift the entire motive as to the reason why he committed these crimes. And yeah, from what everything else, I mean, you could put, maybe psychotic break because of drug abuse. But, it's like you said, it's a tall, challenging order. And again, can they do that? I mean, I guess they can, but they're going to have to kind of shift up their entire game plan, aren't they?
Yes, they can, and I think they're going to have to based on these limitations on the Supreme Court.
Wow. I mean, a lot of what they did in trial one, what Creighton Waters did, you can speak to this far more than anybody could here. Is he educated a jury on a concept they were unfamiliar with, on like just a principle of how some people operate, and that would be familicide. Family annihilator is the term that I think a lot of people heard for the first time in this trial. How difficult is that? I mean, to not only you have your job number one is to try and convince a jury of your side of the story to begin with concepts they're already familiar with, but to somehow interject a concept of a human being capable of doing these sort of things that's wrapped around ideas like, he was in financial trouble, so he decided to kill his family. That doesn't register with a lot of people. But when you really get into the nitty-gritty of the familial side and the psychology of it, I get it. But I've been sitting here studying it and learning it, and it's not the average juror that's able to kind of wrap your mind around it. How difficult is that as an attorney to try and convince a jury of a concept they are completely unfamiliar with, of human behavior?
You know, one quasi-analog to that, Tony, I think, or at least one way to look at it, is in the context of domestic violence victims sometimes do not report. Sometimes there's a latent outcry. It takes a while for them to report it. Sometimes when they report it, then they recant. Then they say, hey, look, I was actually making that stuff up. That didn't happen, when there is substantial evidence that it did. And so as a prosecutor, what I would have to do is you know, this jury would say, gosh, if the alleged victim's saying it didn't happen now, like that's it, intuitively, I'm probably going to go along with that. But we had to educate them using a domestic violence expert on this phenomenon that, hey, this actually happens in domestic violence scenarios. Either they don't report it or there's a cycle of abuse. They go back to the abuser and they recant. And these things happen. That doesn't mean the case is invalid. So it's really sort of smashing the preconceived notions the jury might have regarding these issues and establishing them anew with your experts if you can be persuasive in doing so.
You know, I think one of the greatest challenges a prosecution is going to have because of the familiar side on this one, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this, Eric, about whether defense is going to roll him out more in this one because of not being able to use financial crimes as much, and that's Buster. It's hard to show a familiar side. I would think, again, I'm just doing my conjecture, my behavior side, of showing that he has an intent to kill family members except one. I mean, so I and Buster's been very, very outspoken in support of his father, and more so even afterwards, I think. So even because, from the limited things you see on social media with him, he looks to be unhinged sometimes with his anger. What could actually could play very, very well for countering any mental state Murdaugh might have been in to commit familicide, because you still left one.
Right. And I think if I'm defense, maybe I even call Buster as a witness.
That's what I was
show
thinking.
Murdaugh's character for peacefulness, if they can establish that.
Right.
Because they'll say, hey, this family annihilator nonsense, this is my dad, and I've known him my whole life, and he has been peaceful and gentle and loving towards us. There was a horrible tragedy that took place, but he is not a family annihilator. And I think coming from the son's mouth, the living son's mouth, could be really compelling to a jury.
Yeah.
I think Buster is a wild card in this whole damn thing.
I do too.
Because I think he could be used easily by the prosecution, and he could be easily used by the defense. It all depends where Buster's landing currently in his view of his dad. He hasn't been super vocal. He's kind of just wanted to move on with his life, and the attention that he's gotten from this and all the horrid accusations that have been thrown at him. He's just kind of wanted to, you know, go live a life outside of this Murdaugh land. But I don't know where he sits today. And after it's been a little while since Murdaugh's been convicted. I don't know. I'm not speaking for him, but he may have come to the conclusion his dad did this. And he's the fucking monster that he is.
The leakage I saw actually had him supporting his dad. That's what I'm going to double check right now.
There wasn't much leakage. There's just not a lot. That's the thing.
Right.
That's why I don't know where he sits or stands. And after some time, opinions change. And that's what I wonder. I don't know if Buster would be on his dad's side or if he'd be on the side of the prosecution to keep him away. I mean, that's going to, I don't know. I just don't know where he's going to land. I don't think he's publicly said where he's landing right now. I just think he wants out of the spotlight,
yeah,
period.
Haven't heard from him in a while.
But it would be interesting to see where he lands. And that certainly, I think, would be...
He believes, consistently saying, he believes his dad's innocent.
Well, if that keeps up, then he's a boon
not,
to
he's not
the
happy
defense.
About the ruling.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, I'll you keep talking. I'm gonna.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting where he plays into this, if at all. Let's talk about the more about what we were talking about earlier with the folks of like having an expert come in and talk about. Talk about what familicide is, about family annihilator, expert witness. I'm sure you could find somebody lovely that could speak well on it. There's a huge difference between an expert witness that's not emotionally tied to the case, giving you their expert opinion, versus having Tony Satterfield's brother, who's a vulnerable adult who has some issues, you know, being in there and taking the stand too. An example of look at this vulnerable person here who lost their mother. This is who he's stealing from. I mean, that's a hell of a lot more of an emotional tie to the damage that Alec Murdaugh was doing, allegedly, versus just, and here's Carissa from New Jersey, who studied this forever and can fill you in on this. I mean, one, you are seeing the results, one, you're being told about the results. How do you think that plays in this case, and how far can the prosecution reach in to that bag of tricks, if you will, or damaged human beings by Alec Murdaugh is really what it is, and present them on the stand if the financial information is going to be limited in this case?
Yeah, I think there are upsides and downsides to what are called blind expert witnesses. Expert witnesses who have no association with the case. Oftentimes, they haven't even reviewed case records. They're just talking about intellectual, sometimes scientific concepts. So the upside is that, hey, she has no dog in this race. She's got no interest in this. She's just coming, telling you what the research says, according to her, on the prosecution. That can be attractive. On defense side, I love those experts because I say, you know, hey, have you talked with Alec Murdaugh? Have you ever met him? Have you ever spoken on the phone? How about with Buster? You know, were you at their dinner table when they were celebrating this like really cool family event? And Alec Murdaugh was saying how much he loved his family. And you know, and were you there when he was at their high school graduation and things like that? And you say, hey, you have no connection to this. You have no idea the dynamics that are going on within this family. Your entire opinion is bullshit.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I look at it, so Buster, from what I've been seeing, is been still defending his dad as being the killer, but also did state that he's definitely manipulative, he's definitely a psychopath from his standpoint, but not a killer. So he's basically saying he's got the characteristics of a killer without being a killer.
And it sounds like Buster not wanting to accept his dad.
Yeah, so like you're saying earlier, Tony, he could be used by either defense or prosecution. So if defense wants to go down, and it's, you know, human behavior is not a bag of tricks. It's good. Mm-hmm. You know, so if that's all you have left, though, he could actually set it up well on the prosecution side, saying, "Hey, here's the observed behavior without his conclusion, and here's actually independent science saying what this is capable of." Again, but just because someone's capable of it doesn't mean they did it. So they still have a long leap to go, I would think, Eric. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that, like you all said, Buster is such a wild card that if he were to get up there for the defense and say, hey, my dad is a character for peacefulness. He's never done something like this. I don't think he did this. The prosecution could say, hey, didn't you say that he was a psychopath? Didn't you say he was manipulative? Can't manipulative people change the impressions of other individuals, especially of people they love? Couldn't those sort of dynamics be at play? Couldn't that have affected, your testimony earlier in terms of how you were singing the praises of your father? So yeah, total wild card.
Yeah, he is a wild card. You're right. It really highlights what a wild card he would be. You don't know where he's going to go.
Let me ask you this, because since we're talking about the financial stuff here in this segment, and the question of what's going to be admitted, I know the thought process in some ways is, you know, 12 and a half days of financial information for a crime that's not about financial crimes is seemingly a bit excessive. And the Supreme Court said so as well. The quantity doesn't always equal quality. I would think a good attorney, a good prosecutor could get in there and summarize this sometimes in an even more powerful way than a monotonous 12-day meandering testimony from a string of people. I mean, one is like, see? Yeah, just one after another. See how bad he is? See how bad he is? See how bad he is? See? Could they turn this around and really, you know, get down to the condensed version of it and make it far more powerful in a shorter period of time than a longer period of time if it is admitted? Do you really need 12 days to make that point?
That is so the preferred approach, in my opinion. Look, these jurors, you know, these are just regular people. They didn't sign up for this. They're sitting here for weeks on end. People's attention spans are just not exceptional. They might be worse in modern society. So having a succinct, compelling presentation is seriously important. And one thing too, Tony, is that now that there have been convictions on the financial crimes, unless those convictions are somehow undone, perhaps the prosecution just goes that route and says, hey, it's not us just telling you that he engaged in financial misdeeds. A court has already certified that he had because he admitted it. And so, you know, that can truncate, you know, a days long presentation into a very small summary that could have a lot of sting for this jury.
Already been convicted on those things. That's true as of right now. Could they launch anything between now and then a new trial? A new trial is going to be a bit down the road. It's not going to be happening next week. What if they start to contest that shit before the trial? That would be a powerful thing to say of like, yes, and he has been convicted, but it's all being contested. It's a contested. I mean, that lands a little different than convicted if you're throwing it in front of a jury and they don't have all the context.
100%. In fact, I think strategically, so long as they have ethical grounds to do so, they should be challenging those financial crimes convictions now, because you're exactly right. At the trial, if you know, it's not a final conviction if there's still appellate processes going on. So defense can say, hey, this is not a final conviction. And you know what? You know the reason that he entered that guilty plea? It's because Becky Hill coerced this jury into convicting him of something he didn't do, and he felt he had no other option. Let's talk about Becky Hill, too. So it could open up a whole can of worms that could give the defense even more traction.
He was just trying to be nice and not put people through a long, drawn-out trial because he thought he was already... It's a good Alec. The Alec everybody knows here in the low country. He was just trying to be a good old boy, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think the prosecution might do then? I mean, because I keep looking this up and I keep racking my brain too. Where do you go if they completely say you can't introduce any financial motivation whatsoever? Because everything was about sympathy, because it distractions from his financial stuff. Is there anything left from what you saw before?
It kind of like you alluded to, Robin, ongoing drug abuse of very serious hard drugs can affect a person's psychological processes. They can become paranoid. They can begin to act out. They can become violent. They can become angered. All of those things, perhaps they have to rely more upon that potential precursor to all of this and less on the financial crimes. But even then, you know, a lot of people who use drugs aren't often their wife and kid. So that might be a big ask as well.
It's a big ask for beyond reasonable doubt. And do you see that as potentially happen that they could rule out everything financial? Without being into 12 days, I mean, you without that, there's like nothing.
Or is there?
Yeah. Right.
I think with this ruling, there's a chance they could keep all of it out. I think it's more likely they're going to say, hey, prosecutor, you get to present some evidence of your motive, and that's this financial piece. But that evidence is going to be very circumscribed. And so that might be the ultimate trial ruling for a trial two.
Right.
So many questions. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.